Welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I am your host, Ramita Iyer, a research analyst at the Institute. The Indo-Pacific Economic Framework for Prosperity, or the IPEF, is an economic initiative launched by US President Joe Biden in May 2022. Comprising 14 member countries, the framework is considered to have formidable potential to further regional economic integration. To get a sense of the IPEF and its geoeconomic and geopolitical implications, please listen to episode number 146 titled, The IPEF, What, Why and How. In this episode, we will be looking at the developments since the announcement last year, with a focus on the negotiation rounds and its implications. I am pleased to be joined by Mr. Bipul Chattopadhyay, Executive Director, Consumer Unity and Trust Society, Cuts International. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Chattopadhyay.
Thank you, Ramita. It's my pleasure.
So, officials representing the 14 Indo-Pacific nations met for their second full negotiating round from March 15th to 19th in Bali. This came nearly 3 months after the last full negotiating round in Brisbane and 1 month after a special round in Delhi. Ahead of this round, the United States Trade Representative shared the text for Pillar 1, which is on trade. Could you elaborate on this as well as the progress made in the remaining three pillars since the last meet?
Thank you, Ramita. Let me begin with by saying two things. One is that this Indo-Pacific Economic Framework for Prosperity was launched in May 23, 2022. So we are less than a year from its launch. I think we have made some good progress since it is launched, within a year of its launch. Secondly, this abbreviation IPEF is gaining more and more traction in the policymaking community all around the world. But there is a caveat there. While we tend to speak in abbreviations, we also tend to forget that this is IPEF, Indo-Pacific Economic Framework for Prosperity. So I would like to first emphasize on that term, for prosperity. It is good to know that this initiative is about prosperity. At the same time, I would also add another caveat that while prosperity is important, there may be some people, some groups of people who may be left behind. We should not forget that. We should see that who are the possible, I mean, of course, this is as we make progress, we are going to see all these things, analysis. We need to see that who are the winners and who are the losers, and we should not forget. And this is a mistake that we made earlier, but we should not repeat that mistake. The second thing is, as you have rightly said, it is an economic initiative. It is not just about trade. So it is trade plus or trade plus plus. And that's the reason I think we know that there are four pillars. First pillar is trade, then there is supply chain, third is clean economy, and fourth is very, very interestingly, fourth is on fair economy. So progress is being made on all these pillars. In Brisbane, then in India, in New Delhi, and in Bali, which was last week, 15th to 19th March, we have seen significant progress in a short period of time. On trade pillar, pillar one, on your specific questions, negotiating text, they have been placed before the table on all except one subtext or subtopics of pillar one. So we have negotiating text on, let's say, agriculture, on digital trade, on labor standards, on environmental standards, except on competition policy. I'm yet to figure out why there is not yet any negotiating text on competition policy. But that's for us to figure out as we make progress. Now, there are a couple of interesting things in this text. A, people are already talking about early harvest. Yeah. So one, we need to see that what kind of early harvest that we can think of. In this context, particularly on labor, environment, and digital trade, and on technical assistance, these four subtopics under Pillar 1, United States, they are talking about early harvest by looking at the text which is already available as part of the US-Mexico-Canada agreement. Now we need to see that very, very carefully. And even if some countries may consider them as early harvest, others may not consider them as early harvest. Here, I would end this point by saying one more thing. One is that from the very beginning, it was made clear to all of us that IPEF for prosperity is not a trade negotiation or is not a market access negotiation. Now, on market access, primarily there are two things or two issues. One is related to tariffs. The other is related to non-tariff matters. Now, as I look at this text, I see that those non-tariff measures, how they are dealt with in USMCA, more or less that approach is being followed. That doesn't mean that countries are going to agree with them within a short period of time. There is a lot of negotiations are required. In case of tariff, it's not that important given the composition, except perhaps for India. Our tariffs on agriculture, on industrial goods, everything is relatively higher as compared to other countries who are members of the IPF for prosperity. So it was made very clear it's not about tariff negotiation, but ultimately it's going to be about market access. Because as we see this in this 21st century, trade is more and more impacted by non-tariff measures. So ultimately it's going to be about market access. And while trade pillar is there as one pillar, but it has linkages with all three other pillars. So that we have to also keep in mind.
Looking now at India, which is not part of the trade pillar, I want to focus on, you know, one of the things that you mentioned, which is that there is considerable overlap in the focus areas across the four pillars. What is your sense of how India is dealing with these discussions pertaining to contentious issues like those on labor standards, environment, digital economy, and agriculture?
See, India is an observer in the trade pillar. So India knows what is being discussed under that pillar. Now, if not all this, but some of these issues are contentious from India's point of view. For example, labor standards or environmental standards, these are contentious issues. It is not to say that India or Indian government, they are not aware of these standards or they are not in favor of these standards. That is not the issue. I'll tell you, there is a simple reason for why I'm saying this. The simple reason is that India is a signatory to many of these conventions. I'm talking about ILO conventions. India is also a signatory to the Paris Agreement. India is also a signatory to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, our commitments there. And if I look at labor and environmental standards in particular, there is significant overlap between what they are in trade negotiations and what they are in other platforms, including on Sustainable Development Goals. So we are opposing them in trade negotiations for the simple reason that we are not in favor of imposing sanctions or receiving sanctions as against perhaps not adhering to those standards. So I was looking at the text of the labor standards and environmental standards. Digital trade and agriculture, they are different ballgame. I'll come to that. But when I see the text of labor and environmental standards, it is not that India is not doing them. India is already doing them. What position that India has taken earlier also, at the WTO also, India has taken this position on some of the environmental standards, not on labor standards, that let them remain as best endeavor. type of initiatives, and let there be a positive agenda, not sanction-based agenda, for us to improve our, gradually improve our standards over time. And that has happened. Our situation on child labor 20-25 years ago, is ILO's IPEC program has done wonderful work to eradicate child labor from our country. I'm not saying that they are not there, they're still there in some cases. They may be there. But things have improved. So this gradual improvement through a positive agenda approach is what India is maintaining. Now, coming to digital trade and agriculture, we have our positions at the WTO, so you all know that. What we need to do, and also this also applies to labor and environmental standards, that this is the second thing. We need to keep in mind our positions at the WTO, World Trade Organization negotiations, our positions in various FTA, free trade agreement negotiations, and then develop our position on the IPF text, on trade text in particular. And we have to also look at not just those texts, but also what are the texts which are yet to come on other three pillars, to see what kind of linkages that they are talking about. So once that is clear, then I think India is going to elevate itself from being an observer to a negotiating party in the trade pillar as well.
The negotiating rounds have also witnessed bilateral meetings being held on the sidelines. What value do these meetings bring to the negotiations and the framework itself? Further, with countries from both South Asia and Southeast Asia in the IPEF, do you see them taking steps to use the IPEF to further their integration?
They bring a lot of value. Negotiations or discussions in the corridors, they are as important as negotiations in the rooms. And that is the experience that I have gained over the years, over the last 25 odd years, while closely following various trade negotiations, whether it is at the WTO or it's at the bilateral or at the regional level. Many of the differences can get resolved if there is one-to-one or maybe trilaterals in some cases, one-to-many discussions in the corridor over a cup of tea or coffee. They also help, and this is an important point, in building coalitions. Yeah. And we have experience of that. India is part of, or rather was part of, those coalitions no longer exist at the WTO, was part of G20 and G33 coalitions on agriculture and food security at the WTO, part of NAMA 11 coalition on industrial goods. So these discussions at the in the corridors, they help. Definitely they bring a lot of value. Now, on the second part of your question, I think IPEF for Prosperity is going to help countries in South Asia and Southeast Asia to come together. Interestingly and unfortunately, our trade and investment relationship between countries in South Asia and Southeast Asia is not that high, it's not that big, as compared to what our relation, trade and investment with Europe or say North America. There is a historic reason for that, you see. And also trade facilitation comes into play in this context. The reason being that the kind of products that we have produced so far, there are two things. One, the market is there in Europe and the must product. Market is there more in Europe and North America. That's what we thought. That is changing. And secondly, the countries in Southeast Asia, they are also competing on those products in the same market as South Asian countries are competing. So there is a lot of overlap, a lot of competing needs. And one consequence of that is that very, I would say, suboptimal trade and investment relationship between South Asia and Southeast Asia. In this context, let me also tell you one particular nuance, that I think it's time to look at our geography much more carefully. And instead of South Asia, maybe we can have more focus on in the Bay of Bengal region, the BIMSTEC region, which overlaps between South Asia and Southeast Asia. So my thinking is that let's take one step at a time. Let's have more trade and economic relationship, including investment, within the BIMSTEC countries first, and then take it forward, take that model, take that experience forward to other South Asian, Southeast Asian countries. That way, I think, it's not about India. Our neighboring countries, they are small economies. I think they'll be more comfortable in enhancing their trade and economic relationship with Southeast Asian countries.
Could you throw some light on the reactions or the reception of the business communities to the IPEF? Initially, there seems to have been a sense of reservation among them due to the IPEF's unconventional nature and, you know, the lack of market access. But now, several months on, do you observe any change?
There are two things. One, this business community is not homogeneous, right? So, and the impact will also vary from sector to sector. So business community are slowly getting interested in IPEF. I can see that because they are talking about exploring new markets, not just west of India, but east of India, which is Southeast Asia and East Asian countries. So in that sense, there is a progress. At the same time, we need to see that what would be the sectoral impact of IPEF. It is not trade negotiation per se. It is not about tariff negotiations, fine. But at the end of the day, I think it will be about market access. And more importantly, and this is the geoeconomics and geopolitical developments which are taking place in this region, in the Indo-Pacific region per se. More, you see that historically, since the Second World War, it is evident that countries in Southeast Asia, those who are part of the ASEAN group, it was the United States of America who underwritten their military security, their territorial security and those kind of things. But over time, let's say since mid-80s, early 90s, it was their economic security is more and more getting underwritten by China, right? And it is very evident if I look at the trade and economic linkages between ASEAN countries and China, and also South Korea and Japan. Now that compact, and over 20, 25 years, it was developed as a nice compact. So one country is providing military security, territorial security, the other country is providing, another power is providing economic security or underlining economic security. That compact is, I would say, challenged in a big way, if not broken. It may get broken in near future. By near future, I mean within next 5-6 years. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why this... reasons behind the importance of supply chain pillar of the IPEF. So taking all these things into account, I think we need to see the sectoral impact of IPEF negotiation on specific sectors in our countries, and B, we need to understand the strategic implications of IPEF. IPEF is not about it's not a tactical matter. It's not an operational issue, it's a strategic matter. And for strategic matter, we have to think about we have to think about, based on those assumptions, various scenarios, and then see that how we can make progress by balancing various needs. So that, in that sense, I think we are in a right direction.
Finally, what are the likely next steps in the negotiations? Now, the IPEF is, of course, not a free trade agreement, but can we expect any early harvest agreement, so to speak, in the near future?
So text-based negotiations have started, and countries are already started providing their alternate language to various texts. So we need to see that how they make progress. But I'm not very sure about early harvest. You see, United States is talking about early harvest. particularly on those four subtopics under the trade pillar: labor, environment, digital trade, and technical assistance. But it is important to see that how countries like Fiji, for example, they're going to react to those. Their interest may be completely different than what a big number one economy in the world, their interest is. Then there are countries like Singapore, where their interest is much more on trade facilitation, on digital trade, on services, right? So varying interests are there. So I'm not very sure about early harvest. And most importantly, United States is talking about early harvest, keeping in mind the language of USMCA, US-Mexico-Canada Agreement, on those issues. So it's not yet clear whether other members, other countries, they are also comfortable with the language of USMCA language on those issues. So, and finally, let me also point out that this term early harvest, I think it unnecessarily raises our expectations. And if we cannot fulfill that, then there can be backlash.
Thank you for sharing your insights, Mr. Chattopadhyay. You were listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also get updates on social media. We're on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.